Good evening. Welcome to this episode of the Hot Tag Podcast, our initial one. Your host, Cameron Spiggs. With me is Matt Vandry and Carrie Ann. Good evening, Matt and Carrie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Ready to get going here.
Carrie, how you doing?
I'm good, Terry. Ready to roll.
All right. First thing I'm going to talk about is how do we fix Raw?
Well, let's see. I mean, if you were watching it, you know, what 2 hours ago?
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's a lot. For me, it's get rid of the Alexa storyline. I don't think it's doing anybody any favors.
Yeah, so absolutely no disagree. Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with that. So I kind of listed like three things here I think that could really be done to improve Raw. So I think the low-hanging fruit here, get rid of the three-hour show. I mean, a two-hour show covers a lot of things, but that's not going to happen. Number one, though, how about we get different people involved in the title picture and make things like belts matter again? Like Drew McIntyre and Lashley have been going at it for, what, 8 months now? They haven't improved the storyline. It's just been kind of a hot potato back and forth, winning and losing here and there. It's not been overly exciting. I guess one thing, you know, Terry, we've talked about this a couple times before. Like, maybe you realize Raw isn't your flagship show anymore. And, you know, push tag team wrestling on Raw. Push a cruiserweight title. You know, just make the Intercontinental title mean something. Have a tournament. Do something different. And I guess, you know, we were talking before the show here a little bit, but the one other thing I think I'd like to see Raw go to that could really fix things is go more to like an AEW-style television program where we feature wrestling and just less nonsense and garbage. Let's make Raw a wrestling television show again. And I think right there you could fix a lot of just the weird stuff that they do on a week-to-week basis that makes no sense and doesn't add to the product. And I guess I'm off my soapbox for that.
Somebody
for me,
wants...
I'd say...
Go ahead, Carrie.
I would say my number one is maybe adult it a little bit. I mean, you got to think about when WWE was really at its peak. I mean, it was the Attitude Era. It's when the envelope was being pushed on a weekly basis. I kind of feel like the PG era has kind of hurt them a little bit. Because, I mean, you have... If you flip over to AEW, you got blood. You got some of the things that WWE has kind of shied off of. Another thing I was kind of thinking of, I feel like having these guys, like almost having these guys that are super green, they're big men, but they're mm-hmm. super green. I think that's a detriment because they're not, I mean, I put them in the performance center, have them, you know, give them a little bit more than what they're, than, mm-hmm. I mean, you're just putting a big dude out there. They're not really doing anything.
I would say.
To be fair, at least they put them with Styles. I mean, I think that helps them along, and you can build them up a little bit like that.
They're putting them with some guys that know what they're doing. That is true. But I mean, they're still just putting them out there. They're standing there, or they're enforcing. They're not really doing. They're not. I don't feel like they're really mm-hmm. adding anything where they could be.
Mm-hmm. For me, I would. Yeah. I would first, Vince has to either sell the company or they have to fire everyone in a position of influence in that company for the simple fact that no one's going to counteract Vince. You got Bruce Pritchard, who is just a yes man, who will swear to every lie that Vince McMahon tells. You have a bunch of writers who have never attended a show other than for work. It is, watching Raw, I remember going back to, like, 93. I wasn't even 20 years old yet. I would watch Raw. That's when I started. It's been a few years. And it is stunning to me that the product is this bad. It is being shot. It is being written for an audience of one. Vince McMahon is the one that they're trying to please.
It's rough to watch Raw some weeks. Some weeks I'm just like, okay, I have to turn it off. I can't even sit and watch it.
It's become habit now. It's like when I was like, oh, it's Monday, it's Raw, okay. Even if I'm not interested in it, like, it's background noise.
On in the background, right.
Exactly. It's like, okay, Raw is on. There's no football on. The Mets are just the Mets just won. I need to do something. And it's just kind of flipped to it. Now, all three of us have watched the Dark Side of the Ring AEW documentaries, and I'm sure that we have different takes. And my thing is, which do you prefer? I'll start with Kerry first. Which of these prefer, and how could the other one that you don't prefer improve?
I'm going to say I prefer the A&E because it's a little deeper than what Dark Side's offering. I feel like Dark Side's kind of offering like a shock value kind of experience, where on the other side, I mean, the A&E version to me is still giving Vince control over the narrative on a few guys. The ones that I've seen, like the ones with Brett, the ones with Warrior, the one with Michaels, Vince is still getting control of the narrative on these guys. With the Dark Side of the Ring, you're not getting that Vince angle on it. You're getting a different view on it. But I still, like I said, I still think I like the A&E. It goes a little deeper and it's a little more than Dark Side.
Matt?
So, I guess I look at it, they're kind of two totally separate things for separate people, aren't they, in a way? Anyhow, I do prefer the Dark Side of the Ring, and I think I prefer it because it's guys that are, like Kerry was saying, they're away from the wrestling product. They don't have any reason to lie to me or make it into a fluff piece. Like, I mean, who am I thinking? Ultimate Warrior. I mean, A&E moved up their Ultimate Warrior biography in order to more or less counteract or get the story out there before Dark Side came in with, I mean, their completely different version of Ultimate Warrior. I mean, I just feel like I get the truth out of Dark Side of the Ring, where, again, because Vince has a lot of creative control over what A&E is doing with this, you're not getting the full story. Now, I will say I enjoyed the Shawn Michaels one. I know I've talked to you guys about that. I thought that was pretty well done because, I mean, they kind of went at Shawn hard for a lot of that biography. So I enjoy both of them. But, again, they're kind of two different things for two different people in a sense. Like, I mean, one's a biography about one man's life and one's telling about the dark things that have happened either in their career or their life. I mean, is the Jake Roberts story and or the who was it, Grizzly Smith? That was good. I don't know. I guess I just prefer the Dark Side of the Ring, but that's my take on it.
I'm kind of side with Matt and kind of see it where, being a longtime fan, I've been a fan for a few minutes, and it is interesting to watch guys I grew up watching on TV, like the Von Erich story. They delve deep into the Von Erich story and how that whole family, the father was kind of a dick, and he was kind of mean, and he pushed his boys, even though a couple of them weren't meant to be in the ring. They went as far as to even invent a Von Erich cousin, Lance. Random guy from Portland who was a wrestler named Steve Vaughn became Lance Von Erich after Kerry suffered the amputated foot in the motorcycle accident. They invented a whole family member.
I almost forgot about that. You brought that up. Wow.
I mean, I guess I'll put another angle to it. I'm as my husband likes to refer to me, I'm the ultimate mark. You know, I always take that personal note with wrestling, and I kind of feel like the Dark Side of the Ring kind of, it's almost more painful to watch. It's almost a little more, it's grittier, it's more painful because the stories that they're pulling are my heroes. And to see my heroes suffering, some of them have been very difficult for me to watch. Because, like I said, I'm still that kid who, you know, during me and my brother, I mean, me and my brother are 17 months apart. I mean, we'd pull our mattresses out of our bedrooms into the hallway at home, and we'd pretend we were the Rockers. So, I mean, I still have that, like, real personal thing with wrestling, I think. And it's hard to see your hero suffer.
It is.
I mean, absolutely. You can't disagree with that at all. I guess where I come from with the dark side stuff, though, is like Collision in Korea. I mean, it wasn't even a bad story. It was something I knew was out there, I guess, but didn't know much about it. I found that absolutely fascinating how these guys from WCW went over there. And I mean, what an experience that had to have been, though, to wrestle in front of how many hundreds of thousands of people and not a single fan. I feel like they just, I don't know, the stuff that they cover is maybe more interesting to me than, I get it. The wrestling biographies are great. I don't like, though, too, like, the Macho Man, that was a hit piece dang near. Like, they had people totally removed from the wrestling side of things, just more or less going at him about being kind of a control freak. I didn't care for that. I don't like that WWE has that creative. And if they have an axe to grind, they can go at a guy like that. I didn't care for that.
And Vince,
maybe that
had
biased me towards Darkseid.
Yeah. The only issue I have with Darkseid, the only one I've ever come to stand was a Nick Gage one. Here's this dude who, he's a trash can wrestler. It's like you hit him with light tubes and he's supposed to be some sort of cult icon. And just the thoughts of his fandom is just, it's a bunch of toothless meth heads. And it's just, it's weird to me. Like,
I never thought I'd feel sorry for David Arquette, but I felt sorry for David Arquette watching that one.
Yeah,
I was just like, wow. Train wreck.
He literally got beat up by, like, somebody who, they always say in wrestling, you're supposed to, when you have an opponent, they're trusting you with their physical health. And this dude who was just a nut.
He took a pizza cutter to his face.
I wouldn't trust that guy with a plant. There's nothing I would trust that dude with.
And his loyal fans were, as the weeks go on, we'll definitely get into the interesting life of the garbage wrestling fan. But we need to step out and take a quick break. And after our first commercial break, you are listening to the Hot Tag Podcast on the FBC Radio Network. We are back with the Hot Tag Podcast. Terrence Biggs, Matt Vandry, Carrie Angie. Carrie, to you, as someone who has watched wrestling for a long time, there's been a sort of a monumental shift in title reigns. Me being a kid, I grew up, Bob Backlund had the title for 5 years. Now, this isn't the unhinged Mr. Backlund. This was straight up white meat baby face Bob Backlund, who had the title for 5 years after Superstar Billy Graham. I was five. He had the title pretty much until the Iron Sheik beat him in 1983. Ric Flair had the title for years at a time. Why does it seem like fans can only be conditioned for the 6 to 8 month title reign where the champion will probably win the title in the summer and lose it at Mania?
I mean, I think it has to go along with some of the instant gratification now and some of the, like, the Twitter atmosphere, the blog atmosphere, the social media aspect of it. I think that has something to do with it. I think it's people want that instant. They want to change. They want something fresh, new all the time. I don't feel like, I mean, there's so much wrestling content available now. It's not like it used to be. It's not so rare anymore. I kind of feel like, with these title reigns, I mean, I would like to see longer reigns with some people, but with some people, it only seems right for them to have a short one. I mean, I really feel like the way it depends on the wrestler, it's the context, it's the platform, it's the frequency of pay-per-views, it's what belt it is. I mean, I really feel like both AEW and WWE would benefit from giving their mid titles, like their Intercontinental title, their TV, their TNT championship, those could be the short title reigns to satisfy those people, and then keep the belt on the champs for longer. I think that could satisfy everybody.
Now, Matt, to you first. We need to give a shout out to the third or fourth consecutive title reigns. our guy Vacant, who has 13 WWE titles. Vacant has a 13-time World Heavyweight Champion. Now, to Kerry's point, do you think that there's an attention span lacking, or do you think that we are right where we should be as far as appropriate title lengths?
I guess I'm not really offended by how long title reigns have been lately. I think a lot of it has to do with, I mean, how big is WWE's roster? I know one time a few years ago it was like 215 wrestlers. I mean, you've got a lot of people that you need to fit into programming over the course of a year. So I guess, how do you do that? You get people involved in a title scene here and there. I think you're just going to naturally have, because your rosters are so much bigger. It's not as regional as it used to be. You're just going to have more people, more or less, in the title picture, and people want to see different things. So I think it just kind of goes with how big, you know, how the wrestling scene has changed then from 30 years ago, where you did have wrestling, you know, in different territories yet. And I was probably going back 40 years for that, but different territories and stuff. You don't have that. You just have WWE, AEW, and you've got massive rosters, and you need to give these people something to do, more or less. So I don't know. I guess for me, I was always entertained during the Attitude Era when they played hot potato with the belt. I'm not saying that that's what they should go to, but there were a lot of different people involved every week. And, well, as someone growing up, I guess I kind of enjoyed it. But, someone like a Roman Reigns, I like that he's had a nice extended run. I like when Brock Lesnar's had extended runs for the most part. I think wrestling has just kind of changed in that regard. And, you know, as Kerry said, societally, we've changed as a whole, too. So
now,
that's where I guess I'd fall on it.
That makes sense to me. As we spin forward towards, you know, we have the two major promotions. We have small promotions like your ROHs and whatever Impact is on TV floating around in the atmosphere. But, Matt, to you, what six wrestlers would you use to start a promotion right now?
Sure. So I when this was kind of brought up today, I disqualified anybody outside of AEW and WWE. I want proven people. Now, I get it, New Japan. I watch it from time to time. I guess I'm not as versed as maybe I could be on it, but I do watch a little bit of it from time to time. But I disqualified it. I want the guys that are proven. These are the six I came up with, and I can pretty much guarantee you'll both hate this list. One, my first guy, I'd start a company with. I really, really like Roman Reigns. I think he's super talented. I enjoy him a lot. I could watch Roman Reigns all day, every day wrestling. I think he's put on some great matches. I think he's improved. I think what he's currently doing, I think, is wonderful. I really like Roman Reigns. You'll both hate this. I like Randy Orton a lot. I think he's just a good, steady guy. He's not dangerous in the ring, and you know what you're going to get out of him. And, you know, he's put on some pretty entertaining matches over the years. I guess a third guy I picked from WWE, I love Kofi Kingston. I've been on that bandwagon for a long time. I think he adds something different, and he's credible. I mean, I think he has shown that in his title reign, two years ago? So, and I guess the other three I have here listed, Darby Allin. I really enjoy watching his matches. He's believable as a small guy. I don't know if that's someone you could push to the title picture, but he'd be a great guy to have on your small six-man roster. Hangman Page, that guy's incredible. Does not get nearly enough credit for what he's doing in AEW. Big guy that can just do it all. And Terry, I would put Kenny Omega on this with the asterisk that he harnesses his foolish stuff.
Yes.
If he stays away from that,
okay.
That guy has put on some of the best five-star matches I have seen in the last decade. So if he harnesses the foolish stuff and sticks to wrestling, I will allow Kenny Omega to be one of the six I start my company with.
That's a sound list. Kerry, who you got?
All right, well, I have to go back to a couple of, I mean, my, my, these, this is going to be a wholly, entirely nostalgic, emotional list. But my top man's got to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. There's, I don't think there's been a draw like him maybe ever. I think he's probably, he's in my book, he is the number one. He is the top of the mountain. That being said, I'm going to have to go. Both of you might chew me off of here for saying this, but Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy is the consummate curtain jerker. He is the consummate just, he makes you, at least for me, he makes it for me. There's something about this dude that I can't keep my eyes off of. And then in my third spot, I'm going to have to go with the everyman, just the guy we always rooted for, Mick Foley. You have to have a Mick Foley, I think. And then for my ladies, I'm going to have to go with a Molly Holly. I would like to see more ladies like her, the ladies that can just get in there and go and not necessarily be judged by what they're looking like, what they're wearing, that kind of stuff. Also on my list, I'm going to have to absolutely put Adam Page there. I think if given the chance, he could be exactly the champion that AEW needs. I think I'm going to have to round my list out probably with The Undertaker. The Undertaker is my second in line favorite of all time.
That's going to be
my team.
That's a damn good list. I went kind of similar but sideways. Well, we all agree on Adam Page because he is the future AEW. He is going to be the one to carry them into the next 3, 4, 5 years, maybe longer. Adam Cole from NXT, where he carried that brand on his back for 4 years. 4 years, and he's only 31 years old, and he has a lot of time left. My only thing with him, he is a little small, but we're in the age of small guys being believable. Walter, the NXT champ, every federation needs a good, solid, big man, scary heel type. Walter is legit and scary. Like, he looks like he will hurt somebody, and he's believable. He's not fancy. He's black trunks, black boots, just he looks like a heel.
He bludgeons you.
Yes, he beats you. This one's going to be kind of strange, but Sammy Guevara, where still young enough where he can grow into his persona, he can grow into his abilities, where he's agile enough to pull off flippy nonsense, but he's also, he can talk, and he can talk people into these arenas, and I like that. Pac is a guy that, smaller guy, can be a healer face, but a good worker. You need that type of worker type. They need that, and I think that he's perfect for it. But last, the only woman I have on his list, Bianca Belair. You need your women's division to have a capable athlete. And she, from what people say, she is the best athlete, best female athlete to ever walk in the doors of WWE, ever. And it is one of those things that they need something to build around her. They need to give her a quality competition. That's like my Fed. And I was going to go Daniel Bryan, and I like Daniel Bryan because he was a little guy who the fans took to, he got himself over. The fans got him over. Despite not being what the company wanted, he got himself over. Massive to this day. If not for the concussion history and the issues and injuries, he would be the first pick. Now, as we look towards, in summer, because, if the official summer start is, I think, June 22nd, got to talk about our first wrestling summer memories. Carrie, growing up in Louisiana, you were probably not too far from the Cajun Dome. What was your first summer memory of pro wrestling?
I'm probably going to have to say the first SummerSlam I watched with my dad. My dad passed away when I was 10. And, I mean, wrestling has been a link to keeping his memory alive for me. So I would probably have to say I don't even really remember what SummerSlam it was. I just remember being with my dad. Not being in school, I mean, me and my dad would watch wrestling all the time. Just those memories of being with him and watching Hogan, watching, you know, all the greats in the 90s. That those memories will mean a lot to me.
Matt, what would you say is your earliest summer pro wrestling memory?
All right, it was 1990 SummerSlam, which makes sense because they only had like 4 pay-per-views back in the day. But anyhow, oh man, leading off the card, well, I think it led off the card. I remember it was the Rockers versus Power and Glory. And I remember Shawn Michaels had a kayfabe injury, like, and Marty Jannetty went out there and got his butt kicked. Like, but the Rockers were cool. Like, I was into it. Like, as a little kid, I was really into it. I think, what was the tag team match? The Hart Foundation versus Demolition, best 2 out of 3 falls. It just, I mean, I loved Bret Hart. Oh, I still do. He's the best there is, best there was, best there ever will be. You know, it was just something about seeing them go up against Demolition and kind of beat all the odds. And you got to see the Legion of Doom come out and do a little interference and clean up the match when Crush was hiding under the ring. And, you know, it was entertaining stuff like that. And I guess I remember there was a double main event. I think it was Hulk Hogan and Earthquake. Didn't really care about that too much. But I was a huge Ultimate Warrior fan. He was the champion, ended the show, steel cage against Rick Rude. He burned himself out running around the ring 9 times before the match started. But, you know, it was a satisfying ending to SummerSlam. I think I've watched that on VHS about 1,000 times. And, you know, I watched it with my grandpa, my grandma, aunts, uncles, mom, dad, everyone. And, you know, it's just, it's the pay-per-view I'll just always remember. I, like I said, watched it a good 30 times. And it was just, it kind of makes me wish that's how wrestling it is today, how it was back then. So. Really enjoyed that one.
I can actually think of mine in my head. Like I said, I'm 5 years old, so it's probably June of summer 1979. So we lived in Hartford, and everyone knows that Hartford was one of the main cities in the old WWWF, and they would show up every 6 weeks. Every 6 weeks, and my father and I would make that trek from Hartford to New York, to Boston, to Providence. We would do the circuit, basically, because he's a trucker, and being a teamster, he would get tickets. So, hey, I got tickets to these matches, and it was being a little kid and just going to these matches and seeing guys that you see on TV and being allowed to stay up and watch when you should be taking your ass to sleep. It was just, As I look back at it, it was just, Hartford was one of those towns that it was filled. There were no theme songs. There were no, it wasn't much, there was no pyro, no theme songs. It was just, it was guys wrestling. And like I mentioned, Bob Backlund was the most bland babyface ever. But he drew with the crowd because people wanted to see old Bob come back. And he would come back, and he would win with a chicken wing, and he would make somebody tap. And as I think about it, it was – and seeing Andre come down the aisle and seeing, like, the spotlight find him, it is phenomenal. And I – being a little kid, it was – it made you smile. It made you thankful. It was thankful because I had no idea what – the sport was about to become. And as I look at it and as I think back, it was instrumental in so much because it was that time, you know, it was the time you have with a parent. Like I said, we all had, you know, the parents, and as I look at it, and I'm actually, as we speak, I'm looking at the actual card, and I want to read who's on this card. And some of these names may not, you know, ring a bell, but we're going to go through them. Jose Estrada fought Johnny Rivera. Tito Santana beat Johnny Rods. Jerry and Johnny Valiant were the tag team champions. They beat Ted DiBiase and Dominic DiNucci. Ivan Putski beat Lou Albano via countout. Nikolai Volkoff beat Fred Marzino, who was subbed for Gorilla Monsoon. The North American champion Pat Patterson defeated Bruno Sammartino via countout. This was Boston Garden, July 14, 1979. And yeah, it was one of those things that tickets were like $6. And like I said, that was the team, so we just got tickets. And going to Hartford, the wrestlers would go to this place. If you look at the Hartford Civic Center, it was the only arena that was built inside of a mall. So the people shopping and people wrestling matches. And after the matches, guys would go to this place called the Chicken Shack. It was like a local chicken place. You would see wrestlers with plates and plates of chicken onion rings. One night we walk in, me, one of my brothers, my dad, walk in, and there's a table. And there is more chicken and onion rings and fries than I have ever seen in my whole life. Behind this giant stack of fries, Andre the Giant was eating. And he was the only person in there that, like, because the place didn't serve alcohol, but he was the only person in there that was drinking beer in the place, because who was going to tell him not to? And being a fan of wrestling is, you know, it's something that I've been a fan for 40 years, and that's a long time. And it's just, it's something that we three have in common. It's something that we three want to see the better of. And, you know, our little adventure here is going to, we're probably going to piss some folks off. We're probably going to make people laugh. We're probably going to give the best insight we possibly can. But we're going to do this every week. Matt, Carey, thank you so much for our initial voyage on the Hot Tag Podcast.
Well, thanks for having us.
This has been another episode of the Hot Tag Podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.